Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get, well, not that good at it. You could do about half of your New Year's resolutions. You could, I don't know, join a CrossFit gym or something like that. Or you can start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. So, man, if you're out there and you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your own home. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work all from the comfort of your couch. Choose from personalized, chewable, oral spray and serum treatments to find out which one works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there is no uncomfortable doctor visits. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if a treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/drinkingbros. That's Hims.com/drinkingbros for your personalized hair loss options. Hims.com/drinking bros.
Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
All right, let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends. And they'll deliver them discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code BROS. Tried a bunch of their gummies myself, and it's wild how different each one feels. They're sleepy time gummies. Knock me out in about 15 minutes flat. No hangovers, no grogginess. I wake up feeling amazing the next day. And they're epic euphoria gummies. Well, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your shitty mood. What makes these different is how they've paired THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're just not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere else for that matter. And they've got gummies for literally everything. Immune supports, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS. And they can ship to almost every single state in the United States of America. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off with their first order with code BROS. So head on over to Mood.com. Browse their amazing selection of functional gummies and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use the promo code BROS at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Welcome to Drinking Bros.
Oh, boy. Freddie Wong is on the show today. You're my favorite person on the planet. You're catching me, though, aww, on a day where I am living Final Destination. Things keep getting worse. Lost the first floor of my house in Texas to that storm. Yeah. Pipes burst, all that other stuff. I talked to a drinking bro today. He was like, hey, man, I think I can help you out. And we're going to get some help out here because they just simply don't have enough help in Texas. I go into the bank because my credit card got jacked today. 19 charges at a Bojangles in South Carolina, which is a fun thing.
Like 19 separate orders?
19 separate orders.
Did you figure out what they got?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. What did they order? Did they order like a bunch of dirty rice? What was it exactly?
Great question. So I'm gonna pull up the menu real quick. Pull up the menu because I want to pose this question to you. Okay, I'm gonna look at the charges. The first charge was $19.50.
I mean, that's gonna be impossible to tell because everything there is like $3. Yeah.
No, because the chicken sandwiches got the chicken sandwiches got expensive. I love Bojangles chicken sandwiches. I think they're the best there is. And I want to point that out for the audience. I'm not shitting on Bojangles for this. Clearly, this is somebody else who stole my credit card and did this, and that's fine, right? But $19.50 at Bojangles has got to be two of the new chicken sandwich combos. That's what I'm going with, final answer.
I got to be honest with you here. I'm trying to get on Bojangles' website, and I can't get on it right now. It's just it's timing out.
Yeah, everyone's. It's a fire sale on Bojangles right now. It's the number one place. If you've stolen a credit card, you're going to Bojangles.
There's a DDoS attack going on right now, Bojangles. One of these banks got compromised in Bojangles. There's a run on Bojangles right now.
I'm going to be honest. If you're going to shut a company down and take over like some of the best food in America, that chicken sandwich from Bojangles is worth it.
All right. Relax.
And I'm with you. The next charges were $3.50 a piece. And those were six. Ooh. Six of those charges. I don't know what is $3.50
pieces. That's a biscuit right there. Yeah. $3.29 with the 4.25% sales tax. Yep. That's a biscuit right there, baby.
There it is. And then the rest appear to be either
separate biscuits.
Oh my God. Like, and they're all,
I mean, that's like one at a time there.
The others are all, it looks like soft drinks because they're $1.50 a piece.
That's got to be an employee of Bojangles, right? Because if you walked into Bojangles or go through the drive-thru with a credit card and you did 19 charges in a row, certainly they're going to at least ask for some fucking ID, right? You would expect they would. Jesus Christ. Yes. Like, what kind of sociopath
does that?
Well,
I don't know the kind of operation they run there. I don't know. That's the question of the clientele of Bojangles.
It is. Who's more stoned, the person buying the Bojangles or the person selling the Bojangles? That's what I want to know. No offense to Bojangles. I'm stoned right now, God damn it. I'm just asking.
Yeah, big Bo Jizz fan. But speaking of IDs, I had to go into the bank and show my ID and say, hey, they jacked my credit card, blah, blah, blah. Can you send me a new one? They're like, great. The teller looks at my ID and she says, sir, are you aware that it's your birthday tomorrow and your driver's license expires? And I have to get on a flight back to Texas, and I'm like, oh, no. So I figure that out, go to the DMV, get a new thing. Luckily, they just trust you that you look the same. And I really do look the same. I really do look super young. So they were able to renew it.
Wait. Your driver's license, don't you have a perm?
I have blonde hair from the Steve Prefontaine bet.
Oh, it's the Summer Swayze
hair. You and I had. Right. Yeah. No. This was the Prefontaine bet that I lost to you where I had to dye my hair blonde with the black mustache.
Oh, yeah. So you don't look at – just for the record, you don't look anything like that right now. Not even close.
But I have boyish features, and they were willing to let it slide because I needed an ID to get on a plane. You get it, right? I'm driving home, and I get a text from my mom, and she said, hey, you know, they're cooking me a birthday dinner for tonight with the family and all that stuff. And she goes, your grandmother died this morning.
Oh, boy.
So we don't have to discuss it at dinner tonight. And I was like, no, let's just discuss it at dinner tonight. You know, after everything that's happened at this point,
yeah,
let's go over it at dinner.
May as well lean into it, get it all out at once. It's like ripping the Band-Aid, right?
Yeah, and she looked. She was 88. She lived a great life, so everything is okay there. I knew this was going to happen eventually, just not all at once like this. But Freddie, you're on the show today, and you know the biggest question I have from last night is the BTS thing seems like a sham. And you're our only Asian friend, so you're the only one that can answer me about K-pop.
Can I tell you how annoyed I am? Because you know how you get like the sense of like, dang, I was born at the wrong time. Mm. Like, I remember in high school, like in Seattle, like the Seattle Times even put out this article that which was like, why are Asian men not sexually attractive? Like, Asian men, the least sexually attractive of all the races. I was like, come on. Like, I don't need this. I'm having difficulty already. And you're telling me that in my lifetime that the like white person mentality towards like hot Asian guys has like started to shift and I wasn't around. It's too late for me to take advantage of that. That is such a deep sense of injustice. That's like, man, how much easier like prom dates, like all like in high school I was a total loser. It's like, you're telling me K-pop could have saved me then? Yeah. Like, I don't know.
You should
man.
Have been dancing just, like it, this it the me. Whole time, I guess, like Psy or whatever the fuck his name
I should have been. Yeah. K-pop is, you know, listen, one of my favorite side sort of things when I'm like just browsing around YouTube is just looking at like what are the top K-pop videos going on? Because, you know, we had our music video thing hit and like spending tons of money, crazy, you know, Britney Spears, boy bands, all that stuff, high production value, a lot of money into music videos, the height of the MTV era. And that has, you know, petered off, you know, it's kind of come back here and there because of online video and YouTube. But like that era of spending was a very distinct part of the 90s. Korea saw that and was like, let's just keep going. Let's just continue to spend money on crazy music videos because we have a music industry that supports it. And like, so it is the closest thing to like manufactured pop, right? Like that I can think of because it's so honed and polished and it's just meant to be earworms and catchy. And to wit, it works even though you don't really necessarily understand what anyone's saying if you don't speak Korean. But so that's what it is. It's like them taking those principles and being like, all right, how do we package music into a true product? It's a boy band isn't just one person or five people. No. We need 17 of these dudes in there to match every single possible taste you can possibly have. Like, I think one of my favorites, I think it's like Big Bang has like kind of a fat dude with glasses. I was like, that's me. That's my dude. That's my
They're
dude.
They're trying to and be inclusive, like,
listen,
right?
He's not the most... Yeah, he's not the most popular one, but he's popular for some people. You
he's
know what I mean?
It's
like, listen, we need to
stage,
spread
shit.
The bets.
Yeah.
Still on the stage, still doing the moves.
I like that. So
it sounds like, I mean, it's. So, I mean, you know, listen, I just think we should do it.
Yeah,
we should just start a boy band.
We should start a boy band.
We should. And look, we look, because half those kids look white, right? I don't know how they're doing it if they're bleaching their skin or if it's a lot of makeup. But
I stood next to a K-pop guy once and, like, it is the most surreal experience because their skin is perfect. Like, I was talking to him, and I was just like, and he was born here, went back over there to sort of, you know, get into the music industry. But his face, like, not it looked like a porcelain doll. And I was like, just getting closer and closer and be like, how is this? Like, it looked like I was looking at a camera, like, and with a filter on it, like, in real life. It was the craziest.
Do you think it's a function of that thing, and a lot of Americans don't know about this, but this thing in Asian culture where the tone of your skin reflects your social class,
100%.
Right? You really
100%,
think it's that? So,
right? So
for those at home that don't know, if you go to particularly one of the richer Asian countries, you'll see the wealthier people wearing like face shields and gloves when they're driving their cars because they don't want to get darker skin because that's for farmers. You know what I mean?
So it's ingrained. Oh, 100%. I mean, I'll even say this, right? Like, so it's a very ingrained part of, at least especially Chinese cultures, because, like, my dad is from southern China, which is, like, the agrarian, you know, hotter sun, you're darker generally. Right. I have a lot of his genes. And, like, it is, I remember growing up, it was, like, a point of note to be like, ooh, Freddie's got darker skin. Like, you see skin, like, lightening products in Asia and India as well, because, again, it's so tied to sense of socioeconomic class and so tied to, like, well, if you have darker skin, no, it's no good.
Yeah, so I'm watching it last night, and BTS did a special last night that they aired on MTV. Half of them look white. Mm-hmm. The other ones kind of look Asian. Their voices are coming from somewhere else. I don't know who decided to let them sing Fix You, the Coldplay song last night, but a K-pop band
I didn't see that.
Singing Fix You is a little troublesome, only because some of those letters switch over. You know, the L's turn to R's in some of those letters.
Oh, no.
I'm just going to let you take a moment at home and figure that out yourself, what Fix You sounded like from a K-pop band. But it was trending on Twitter, all top 20 subjects. They even knocked Tiger Woods out of the top 20, you know, and he was in a car crash yesterday that they covered as if he had died. And it was all K-pop. Yeah. How are they eating up all of Twitter, all of YouTube, everything? Videos are number one in the world. How are they doing it?
It's a generational thing, absolutely. And that's kind of what I'm alluding to with my high school. It is very much a generational, younger generational approach into what music fandom is, what the fandom around individuals and cults of personality. You know, like we all had this in our lives too, right? We had the boy band era, but this is just packaged, totally refined, improved upon 2.0 of like that boy band, like packaging music into a whole all-encompassing thing that isn't just the music itself. It's also the personalities. It's also, you know, the products that the sort of, you know, the commercialism, the tie-ins to it, it's crazy. And one of the things I think that's really interesting about Korean, the sort of Korean music industry is, you know, they have mandatory service, right? So at some point,
like, you mean compulsory military service?
Compulsory military service. And so at some point, what is crazy is like, at some point, every one of these boy bands, all of them go into the military at some point. And it becomes, obviously they don't get thrown anywhere. Like, they get some pretty cushy, you know, assignments, but it becomes a whole, it's like when Elvis went into, you know, like in World War II, right? Like when Elvis went into the military, it's like that
level. Well, I think
level,
it was Korea
but it's
for
over
Elvis,
and over
right?
again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
Korea.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah,
and it's with regard to the whole branding and packaging thing, that is something that, first of all, anybody that's in media should be doing it because it makes fucking sense. But I feel like the Asians have, like, of particularly in China with the movie industry, and then Korea with the music industry, have really figured it out. They've put any kind of thing that might be offensive to them aside. Maybe they just never cared about it in the first place and just marched on and made money. I mean, that's what it's all about, is being successful. Now, there's a new phrase around college campuses in the United States called Asian privilege, right? Because the highest median income of any group of people is Asian males in America right now. And instead of the premise being that they've spent their youths, the families really cared about their education and putting them on a path to a good career, and then they worked hard and got to that career, the presumption is that because they're Asian, they had those opportunities and were successful. Now, maybe that's true insofar as their families were supporting them. That's absolutely the fact. Mm-hmm. But it has nothing to do intrinsically with your ethnicity, right? It's just about the it's about the process and not who you are as a person, your existence.
Yeah, you know, so it's really interesting because I think I can only speak to my own experience in terms of, you know, my upbringing. But there was a couple of things that really stick out to me in terms of at least a mindset that was engendered by my parents, which was a very practically driven mindset. Like, I remember even in high school, my dad pulling me aside and being like, hey, listen, Social Security, you're not getting it. Like, you, whatever, like, he was like, you need to aim at this amount of money in your retirement accounts by this age, because you need, this is just the way that the world is going, and this is what you need to focus on. And like, it was all sort of geared towards these very pragmatic sort of approaches to it. I remember even when he went during the 2008, 2009 housing stuff, my dad being like, he was joking around being like, you know what, this isn't like, you know how they should be doing it? Like, they shouldn't just be, you know, foreclosing stuff. Like, if this was an Asian country, he was saying like, the bank would just go to them and be like, listen, oh, you can't pay. How much can you pay? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's this sort of the mentality of like, okay, like, what can you get out of it? And it's, I remember very much kind of thinking, you know, I think that sort of pragmatism is, I think, at least part of my own upbringing, a lot of that emphasis, which was like, look at the world around you. How does the world function? The world runs on money. You need this thing in order for X, Y, and Z. Therefore, how do you get from, you know, point A to point B? How do you get that? And there isn't a lot of consideration, right? You know, I think there's a give and take there, right? There isn't a lot of consideration towards, you know, that. And also, I think that talks to a lot of that stereotype of like, okay, what, you know, Asians are, what would they go for? They go for doctors, lawyers, and dentists and all that, right? And a lot of that, I think, comes from, it's born from not necessarily a cultural, like, hey, we think doctors are great. It was also like, hey, we think that doctors are financially secure, and that's a good idea to be financially secure. It's kind of where that's going.
I only trust Asian doctors, Freddie. I'm going to be real. I do separate shit by races. I only want a fucking Asian doctor working on me.
Agree. I actually was at a birthday dinner last night with Xander Pappas and Renee Rouleau, the skincare woman. Her COO is married to an Indian woman, right? And she was talking about her family and blah blah blah. We just got into the discussion of doctors. I'm like, yeah, if I walk into a clinic or hospital and see a white doctor, I'm like, no, get out of here.
Come Moving on.
Like,
yes.
It's just cycle through. Let's get to the right person here. You know what I'm talking about. Don't make me say it out loud.
Fine. I say it out loud, Freddie. I'm like, find me an Indian or an Asian ASAP, or I'm getting the fuck out of here. Because if all you hire is white employees inside this doctor's facility,
yeah, no
I
way.
Am gone, my man.
Yeah.
Who, you want to take a stab at who was working on Tiger Woods' leg for 12 hours yesterday? It wasn't a honky.
Yeah, his name was not Greg. I promise you that.
Yeah.
No
wasn't
fucking
Greg
chance.
Stevenson.
Yeah, no, not a chance.
Ask Dan Register and Hot Bob. I guarantee you, pull up the doctor's name from yesterday. It's on TMZ. There's no way it's a white man. There is no fucking way a white man worked on Tiger Woods' leg yesterday.
I would certainly hope not. I mean,
yeah, it's interesting, you know. And I think that, like, one of the things that was great was, you know, like, I remember, just to give you an idea of, like, the mindset that I grew up with, when I said I wanted to do movies, I wanted to do entertainment, it was always this thing, and by the way, it's almost like this running joke where it's like, oh, it's like there's only two answers when people are like, did your parents, I get that all the time, like, did your parents support you when you wanted to do that? It's like, because the assumption is like, oh, you got, and it's like, you got Asian parents, they're not going to support you. I'm like, there's only two answers to it. It's either, yeah, they did, or no. It's like, okay. But what was funny is I remember my dad afterwards, like, he was like, oh, interesting. And then, like, a week later, he was like, hey, I think going into movies is a good idea, because he had a Wall Street Journal article being like, America's exports are no longer going to be commodities. It's going to be cultural exports. And he's like, getting in this industry is one that probably has some future proofing, because America's Hollywood, you know, and music industry still, it's like entertainment industry is still going to work as an export. I'm like, of course, it's a very typical move for my dad to be like, okay, we're focusing on, like, what is the, okay, it's good. It's actually an okay thing, because it has some financial baseline that is that can go into the future, you know?
And Asians own Hollywood. Like, it's a great thing, dude. They own half the movie studios, Grauman's Theater.
In terms of the way the, like, that is something that from a, you know, 10,000 foot view, that is to me really, like, I mean, again, it's the way that the world is going. Everyone sees China as this potential market, so everyone's trying to kowtow to them, right? And it's just one of those things where I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I think that there is a certain degree of underestimation in the West when it comes to a country that has been around and has a, you know, functioning society and culture for 5,000 odd years, right? It's like they're not new to deals, right? It's like so I think a lot of times people think it's like, oh, great, we're going to do this and we're going to get in there and we're going to get access to the Chinese market. It's like, not that simple, not that easy.
Right.
And I think a lot of people lose sight of what are you trading in order to do that, in order to pursue, oh, this emerging market and all these numbers and all these people, you know?
I got a quick update for you here. Dr. Anish Mahajan, Indian, worked on Tiger Woods yesterday. I called it, and I didn't even have to look at it, Freddie. They said Tiger was conscious when they got him out of the vehicle, and they were asking him shit. And he said, hey, I'm okay, which he clearly wasn't. Yeah. He had bones sticking out of his legs and all that shit. But he did have the foresight to say three things. Grab my golf bag, grab my luggage, which is true. And then he said, get me a fucking Indian or Asian doctor.
Yeah. Now, we don't have the audio of that happening, but we're pretty sure it did. By the way, to your point, the doctor from the facility that gave the press conference was a white guy. The one that did the surgery was an Indian. The guy that gave the press conference was white. I don't know why. I don't know why.
No, that's exactly what happens. I can tell you exactly why. I used to partner up with Asians during science projects all through growing up, K through 12, right?
You give the presentation.
Correct. I give the presentation.
He's the DJ and I'm the rapper.
So is this like, sure, yeah. But that's that whole thing with the pragmatism is something that I actually respect. It's and I don't mean necessarily even American Asians, the Asian cultures that are still in particularly in Southeast Asia, but China as well. So they've embraced the idea of pragmatism and ignored all the intersectional bullshit. They're not worried. Like when Matt Damon comes to star in their movie, it's because they want him there because they want to make fucking money. They don't give a shit about, oh, this character should be represented by an Asian. Like, no, dude, we want the biggest star possible so we could sell fucking tickets to this shit. You know what I mean? I respect that shit.
Yeah. So
why do we have
so
to?
So one of the interest.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying, definitely. And I think everything has a side effect, right? There's no such thing as a perfect sort of approach to anything. And one of the interesting side effects that I've seen, talking even to some of my friends who are in the entertainment industry as Asians, is this concept of, they talk about it as like the idea of a bamboo ceiling, right? Which is, look, we have highly educated, on average, going into the workforce. They don't rise up to the CEO level. A lot of people seem to get stuck at this VP level. And this is something that I've thought a lot about, which is like, okay, you have everything on paper. And I think there's this emphasis sometimes, because I think the downside to that is there's this emphasis on you need to fit in. You need to not be, a perfect example. In English, we have a phrase that goes, right, the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Exactly.
I.e., the thing that makes the most noise is the thing that gets attention. In Chinese, the proverb is almost that, but a little bit different, which is the nail that sticks out gets hammered down, which is like a right? It means the same thing, but it's a different approach to it. It's like, don't stand out.
Right.
You don't want to be the one that gets hammered down. You need to blend in a little bit. And one of the things that I found here is like, I feel it sometimes in like meetings where it's like, I don't want to rock the boat too hard. I don't want to speak up. And then what I've realized as the sort of the older I get and the more I see how the processes work, like kind of being loud and like asserting yourself, that's what's seen as like, you know, sort of alpha energy, so to speak. It's what people are attracted to. It's like, and I've seen so many instances where it's like, yeah, this loudmouth idiot, but they keep getting promoted and they keep getting sort of rising through the ranks because it's like, that's also that sort of bravado is something that is something that, you know, like I think I feel at a deep level is something I don't want to try to engage in. And it's like even been an effort to be like, maybe I need to kind of like swing my dick around a little more just to, you know, like, because it clearly the way that I'm kind of approaching things, which is trying to, you know, a little bit keep my head down, you know, just do the work, that works to some extent. But, you know, I think someone who's loud and doesn't do the work in America, I found, tends to get a little further than the people who are just quiet and doing the work. You know what I mean? Like, and obviously there's exceptions to both of those.
I agree. Two things you said are interesting there is, you know, your hammer and nail reference. Obviously that's to building the railroads, which I found interesting.
Yeah.
Freddie.
Super racist on your part. We're actually filing a lawsuit against you right now. So
yeah,
stand by for
that. We're going to have to get you on libel for that.
Yeah.
But the other one is, it's interesting that you brought up like loudmouth Americans getting more money. I just watched this brand new doc that dropped last night on Tekashi 6ix9ine, and it went over his whole career and process and everything else and how untalented he is, but that he's using computer algorithms and social media and phones to get richer and richer and richer and achieve all of this success. And that's where he started from. So he was the one who figured out, hey, man, I can actually get rich off of social media, but what can I do to get the richest and most famous out of it? Scream at people, trolling, everything you can imagine, and a limited amount of talent. And that's what he did to get a gajillion followers and sell millions of albums and all this shit. Now, it almost backfired when he went to jail and had to snitch on everybody to get out of there. But, I mean, he's making millions upon millions of dollars, and watching that documentary is exactly what you're talking about right now.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to what you prioritize, right? Like, what's the it's like min-maxing in an MMO. It's like, what are you trying to get the most out of at any given thing, right? And I think that, like anything, whatever you pick, there's going to be upsides, there's going to be downsides to it. And there's, I think, you know, if I think about, like, what you should be necessarily doing, I think whatever you pick should at least take into account the way society and the world works, which is, you know, very money driven. It is that it is a very one to one to kind of how your ability to do stuff and do different things has a very strong tie to the money side of things, you know?
Right. And it is, again, what you prioritize. And I think that's reflective of our society these days. I mean, it's hard to say who's the chicken and who's the egg here, right? Is it that we've been so dehumanized that now we're reaching out for any sort of humanity and attention, and it has kind of evolved into this social media culture? I mean, you know, there's certainly correlative, if not causal, links between the rise in social media and the rise in depression, particularly amongst younger women, right? The rate of suicide for women.
Depression and
the
anxiety.
Rate of suicide, yeah, for sure. The rate of suicide, particularly for young women, for that, what they're calling the Gen I, like the iPhone generation, has risen by about 80% just for young women. So younger women who historically have not really committed suicide are now killing themselves in record numbers. And there's a number of different reasons for that. One is the the constant bombardment of the impossible standard that's been complained about in fashion magazines for years. Another reason that, if you've read The Coddling of the American Mind, is because we've taught this youngest generation to all the stuff we learned about post-traumatic stress and how to treat it through cognitive behavioral therapy. We flipped the script, and now we're teaching people to do emotional reasoning and catastrophizing and things like that, that are things you untrain people to do so they get over their post-traumatic stress. We've actually trained this generation to think their feelings are facts, to think that words are violence, to think that every single thing that happens to them is a major event and not just a process that goes through life. And we're seeing the fucking results from it now. So what have we prioritized? It's very interesting to see the wake of destruction, socially speaking. And it has nothing, it's not just about, people like to blame video games or social media. That stuff was just a conduit. It is our attitude that's the real fucking problem, in my opinion.
I think it comes down to, I've always felt that, like, and then again, I think this is a fairly uncontroversial statement, but I think it's one that bears like some thought, which is, I think the feeling of being uncomfortable is important. I think that that's something that is important in how society functions, right? Like the thing that really, like, I feel very strongly about is, I remember seeing this thing where people were like, hey, you know, you can check a box when you get an Uber and you can say, I don't want to talk to this person. Mm. Like, I want to do that through the phone. And that, to me, like, I feel like society is about negotiating and navigating other people and the other. And sometimes you're not going to line up and it's going to be uncomfortable. And it is uncomfortable to be in the car and be like, hey, sorry, I don't want to talk. It's a little bit awkward, right? And I think there's so much stuff in our lives that allow us to sidestep this. Like for example, I remember growing up, like, I was nervous to, like, call a pizza place to order a pizza.
Right.
And I think about now, I'm like, well, it's great. I got an app. I can just, you know, hit the thing. I don't even need to talk to anybody. I can just come in. I can avoid this discomfort. And I remember all this debate about, like, those devices on airplanes where you can, like, you know, put them on the seat in front of you, and now the person can't recline their seat in front of you. That's maybe the ultimate example of this.
Yeah.
Where it's like, that's to avoid a conversation, a potentially uncomfortable conversation, right? But I think that that discomfort is important because that's how we place ourselves in society, and that's how we understand our fellow human being, and that negotiation has to happen. And
I think that technology and automation, beyond just the economic creative destruction that it's naturally going to cause as things become automated, has had a social effect in this generation that it's never had before, right? So, like you're saying, with the lack of communication and stuff like that, it reminds me of that quote from Captain America during the Avengers. Every time we try to stop a war before it starts, a lot of unnecessary deaths happen. Somebody asked me the other day about teleportation. Like, wouldn't it be nice if we could just teleport somewhere? I'm like, I don't know. Every time we automate things and make things happen quicker than they're supposed to be able to happen, it fucks us over. Like the internet, for example, we now have every piece of information ever right here at our fingertips all the time, and we're not any smarter for it. As a matter of fact, we're dumber for it. We don't know anything. We know a bunch of random facts, but we've lost the ability to go through the process of learning. What's that saying A smart man learns from his own mistakes. A wise man learns from the mistakes of others. That's a cute fucking saying. But in reality, most people learn things from personal experience, like the whole marriage equality thing. In 2005, people hated gay people for whatever reason. I never cared about that issue, but a lot of, I didn't really hate them. They were just like, oh, that's weird. And then as it became more prevalent and their family members started coming out in public and blah, 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 and major celebrities started coming out, like, oh, some people are just gay. It's fine. It's not a big deal. And now that it anybody that comes out against marriage equality, you're like, what the fuck? Even Republicans are like, no, we don't do that here. You know what I mean? So that personal experience and going through that process of having to make that phone call to Domino's or having to have that conversation with someone in public instead of just staring down at your phone and walking around like a fucking ostrich with blinders on all the time is it's fucking us up. Like, we can't communicate with one another anymore. So how can we expect to solve these very complex social issues that are in a non-homogenous society like we are? How can we ever expect that to go okay? You know what I mean? It's never going to go okay.
I go out of my way, actually, to have more conversations with people now, especially with mask on and all that other shit, because it's even easier now to not talk to people or whatever. But last night was my wife's birthday, so I took her out to dinner, and I walked in, and I looked at the hostess, and I was like, where am I laying this dick down? Where at, you know? That way, it's loud. Like, she understands that I'm a person who wants to talk and lay my dick down and have a few drinks inside the establishment. Now, she wasn't real amped about that, Freddie. She didn't give me the look I was hoping for, but I could only see her eyes. Maybe she was laughing underneath the mask. I don't know.
I feel like the Ed Hardy shirt you were wearing may not have helped.
Yeah. Oh, this is actually a Bobby Rahal shirt, vintage, for any Formula One fans.
Oh, are there any sequins on it at all? Or?
There used to be. So, yeah. By the way, Freddie, you'll appreciate this too. I buy myself my own birthday gifts because I don't really trust my wife either, because my birthday's tomorrow. It just came. It is a Timex. Can you see this Timex? Yeah, old school Timex, digital features.
But you know the digital ones are the most
accurate. Really are. And look at this, Freddie, stretch bands. That's a one size fits all for the big guy here.
Oh,
and
man.
Went back to 87 for this because that's what I had. That's what I rocked and enjoyed, as a 4-year-old. And,
Does that have the calculator?
You know, somebody online looked at my watch yesterday and they were like, hey, bro, what are you fucking poor? You don't even have the calculator version. No, I don't, Freddie.
Well, you're carrying around a $1,500 calculator in your pocket all the time. So is it really necessary at this point?
Do I use it? No. This I use more than that. You know, this is time, Freddie. This is more valuable than anything we have on this earth. And it's a Timex.
That thing's going to keep going forever.
They're not a sponsor or anything. It glows in the dark, too, when you press the Indiglow. It's got an Indiglow feature.
Glow in the dark.
Indiglow, brother. No. $36 on Amazon. I don't want to say that I'm rich, but congratulations. You make your own assumptions from that. Will you be a little lamb with us and go through the sponsors real quick? Because every time you're on, we usually get down the rabbit hole of some of the weirdest shit on the planet. We'll talk about the sponsors real quick. First and foremost, ghostbed.com/drinking bros. Ghostbed. All of my house, I lost the first floor. I lost that master, so I lost that adjustable base and the king. You're going to have to send me that bundle package. I know it's 40% off. I know I'm using my own promo code, but I'm also going to write on there, hey, man, I was displaced for yet another natural disaster. Maybe you'll give me a little extra 5-spot off of that. I'm not sure, but you can bet your sweet ass I'm not going anywhere other than ghostbed.com/drinking bros for my mattress needs on this planet, sheets, pillows, adjustable bases, you name it. And again, if you bundle it together, you get 40% off. Just use Drinking Bros at checkouts as the promo code. And as always, they got a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest there at ghostbed.com/drinking bros. Next up, we get Try First Leaf. .com/drinking bros. Wine, Freddie, 6 bottles, $29.95, free shipping. How do you beat that in this life?
Oh, Oh wow, I'm looking at
that. Fucking
right
crazy.
Now.
Yeah, dude. It's so. But here's how it works, Freddie. Since you probably haven't seen it before, you go to firstleaf.com and you answer a bunch of quiz questions that are like about your flavor palette, things like that, like what kind of food you like, if you like certain, like if you like dark chocolate or milk chocolate, various other, like what kind of juices you like. So they custom tailor a box for you with different kind of wines that they think will match that color or that flavor palette. You get them. It's six bottles for $29.95, which is a goddamn ridiculous deal in the first place. But they're all super quality curated wines. Then you drink those wines. You go back onto the site and you rate and review them and to say what you did and didn't like. Then they keep refining your boxes over time. It is the best.
Some wine machine somewhere learns.
Seriously. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Forget about fucking the Terminator and all that bullshit. This is where it's coming to fruition right here. It's all been about wine this whole time. You know what I mean? I think Gary Vee's probably involved somehow. You get that winery he has in Northern California. Somehow he turned on the machine learning. So instead of being hunted by Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's going to be Gary Vee pouring wine on people, I think.
Yeah, could you imagine if he was doing this ad read? Hey, if you hate your job, quit it and go drink some wine all day.
Here's a $2 million winery. You can make something with that. Anyways, First Leaf is great. And I've had it. This is the best. I lived in Oakland and spent probably at least 1 week a month for 7 years in Napa or Sonoma. I've been a member of four or five different major wine clubs, a couple of smaller ones over time. I'm a member of three right now. First Leaf is the best one I've ever used because it's the only one that asks me my opinion on the wines. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So you feel like a rich man, Freddie. You feel like a guy who owns a Timex watch and drinks wine.
This is the experience that nobody has can do, that everyone's dream is, which is you go to a restaurant, you get a bottle of wine, you swirl it, and then when you take the first sip, and then you kind of get a look on your face, and you shake your head, and you whisper something to the sommelier, and they say, right away, sir, and they come and bring you something else. This is that experience.
Yep.
Yeah. This is, hey, shut the fuck up, Holmes. This is my mouth, not yours. I'll put it where I want. I'll put the wine in it I want. Discover new wine like a VIP by becoming a First Leaf member. Join today. You'll get six bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping. Just go to tryfirstleaf.com/drinkingbros. That's six bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping at tryfirstleaf.com/drinkingbros. Again, that's tryfirstleaf.com/drinkingbros. Last but not least, Anthony, we got Roman. We got some boner pills. Freddie, do you ever use any boner pills?
I haven't needed to. Being a swarthy Asian gentleman, I'm virile as hell. But I do have. I understand that it is a concern and a need.
Yeah, just a recreational party boner.
Yeah. Don't.
Oh, you know, I haven't quite.
Look, you know what I mean. It's like you don't necessarily need 100 octane gas in your car, but sometimes it's fun.
Sometimes you need it.
You know what I mean. You want to stand outside and rev that engine. You want to make your girlfriend or wife afraid of what's going to happen next. That's what I say.
Let her live in fear. you know what I'm saying? that's a perfect slogan that I'm sure.
They're not gonna get
dinged for that. But, you know, go to a tattoo parlor and get one of those rulers tattooed from where your dick starts to where it ends on your leg, right? Take one of these fucking boner pills and then see where you end up. If you were at a 4 and this moved it to a 6, congratulations, dude. Actually, you're going to put it up. You're going to put that ruler tattoo going up.
Yep.
For the boner, obviously. Go to GetRoman.com/drinkingbros today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatments. That's GetRoman.com/drinkingbros. GetRoman.com/drinkingbros. Free 2-day shipping. Free online doctor visit. You don't have to go in and tell your female doctor that my dick don't work anymore. Go to GetRoman.com/drinkingbros and complete your online visit today. Freddie, I had a weird question that popped up on my Twitter. Not that Twitter is great because it's hell on earth. I got into it with Richard Marx, the very popular 80s ballad singer last week on Twitter. We went back and forth for about 60 tweets, which is a lot.
Shit.
I don't know him, which is even better. And it was awesome, right? One of the people on there was like, hey, man, I know you. I know your show. And was talking about guests. And they were like, would you get Richard Marx? And I was like, yeah, man, I don't give a fuck. We'll put Richard Marx on the goddamn show. Let him talk about his book. Whatever he wants to do. I don't really give a shit, right? But then they asked me a question of alive or dead, who would you seek advice from?
And it kind of fucked me up. And I was like, well, what about you? And all the people were dead. For you personally, Freddie, if you were trying to get advice from somebody of all time, would they be alive or would they be dead?
Yeah, a lot of them are dead. But then that's kind of jacked up because it's like the ones who are alive are probably going to have a better shot at giving you actionable advice. I think right away a lot of the folks, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of people where I'm like, listen, I don't – you're so far back in the past. I feel like I've gotten your sort of whole shtick. I'm good. Alive or dead?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. So is it a better lesson to learn how to not fail, or a better lesson to learn how to succeed, right? Because I feel like failure is probably more ubiquitous. Failure, if somebody fails in a way, it's probably – that failure style probably applies to more people than the success style applies to people. So I would go with go ahead. I would go with the dead guy.
Because – I think you're right because success, oftentimes people, it's very difficult for any successful person to really get a sense of how much, you know, like, right, like to what extent did luck play a role? I don't, you know, like it's hard to tell sometimes, right? Like in some cases it might not be much. In some cases it might be a lot. And then you're like, you don't even realize it. And you think, well, this worked for me. I mean, like the amount of people I know who are like, this worked for me. This therefore must be the right way. And this is the way to do it for everybody. It's like, I don't know, man. Like maybe look around. But yeah, you know, I think you want that dead guy knowledge, actually, now that I think about it. I think you're right. You want that dead guy knowledge because at least with that, you can think about it in terms of, again, the universality of failure, I think, is a more useful thing.
Yeah, so I asked this. So on a, like, offline, the guy ended up DMing me on Twitter, and I'm high as shit late at night. And I was like, cool, man, I'll entertain this. And I go, who are yours, right?
Wait, I'm sorry. You said Richard Marks DM'd you?
No, not Richard Marks. This was a guy that was commenting on that Richard Marks back and forth.
Yeah.
He was asking if I'd have Richard on the show, and then he got into this. And then he just ended up DMing me offline, and he goes, he got into that question. And I said, hey, man, I don't know you. You don't know me. I'm super high. Who are your people, right? And so he went through it, and he went through it very detailed. And he said, Einstein is definitely one of them. The reason, and I go, why Einstein? Just because he was the smartest person of all time? And he goes, no, I want to know more about the Manhattan Project and if he felt guilty about it.
Of course he did. Well, I don't know if Einstein did, but Oppenheimer sure as shit did. I mean, he actually said, I've become whatever, a destroyed world. I mean, he actually said that out loud. And I don't know if he was trying to take the piss.
I think he had the diary entry that was like, ah, shit, fucked up.
Yeah. Oops.
Just on that but day, just, ah, shit, comma, fucked
that's,
up.
That's, again, one of the books that's going to be coming up on my book club here in a few months is called The Master Switch by Tim Wu. And it discusses how the government, particularly lately in telecommunications and the internet, but for all technology forever, has always tried to grab it and turn it into something like a weapon, right? No matter what it is, whether it's spying on people with telecommunications, using psychographics from social media and the internet to influence elections, or using splitting an atom, which could produce energy for the rest of our existence to blow fucking people off the face of the earth, or maybe destroy our entire planet, right? It's a really good book. But anyways, that's a... I don't know why you would want to talk. I mean, Einstein was a weird guy. Like, maybe it would be interesting to hear his thoughts on the Manhattan Project, but it would also be interesting to hear why he gave his earnings from the Nobel Prize to his wife so she would grant him a divorce so he could move to Germany and marry his cousin. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of weird shit going on in Einstein's life.
You know what it would be? It would be just straight up you interrogating historical figures, be like, yo, what happened here? Like what's going on here? I have to know.
And so that was the other part of it. So, you know, so the next one, I was like, all right, well, who else? And he said Martin Luther King. But the reason why I said Martin Luther King was leadership skills, not, you know, he didn't really want to ask him about like certain events necessarily, but he wanted to focus on his leadership skills and how he was able to organize people. And dude, again, I'm super high, but I'm having this like really thoughtful conversation with this dude in DMs on Twitter at like 12:30 in the morning. And I was like, well, shit, that's interesting. And I was like, is there any?
Like,
and
then I feel like you're building up to like, and then the next morning I looked and this person had been dead for 10 years.
Yeah. A train hasn't come through here in 20 years.
In 20 years.
No, that is a really interesting question, though. And I think a show with me where it's called Dude, What the Fuck? With Dan Holloway.
Dude, what the fuck?
So yeah. I would just ask these celebrities through history or whatever, leaders through history, like, dude, what the fuck? You know what I mean?
Yes.
And just
yes.
let them answer however they want. It would be interesting to do that. I mean, I think that's going back to the point of would you rather hear about somebody's alive or dead or the success or failures to learn from it. That would be a really interesting thing to be able to get inside the mind of people who made some of the biggest mistakes and some of the best leaps forward. Like I think about MLK is a good example. Mandela is another example. Like nobody had any bigger reason than those two guys, people like Medgar Evers, who literally sacrificed their lives to better their, not just their people, but all people. You know what I mean? So Mandela, mm-hmm. nobody had a bigger right to hate everything on earth, particularly white people, than Nelson Mandela. And the first thing he did when he got inaugurated as fucking the leader of that country was travel around the entire country and tell all the local community leaders, do not be violent, do not be dicks, let's get over this shit and move on, because if we spend the next 15 years getting retribution, we're not going to make any fucking progress for ourselves. That is a very nuanced way to look at things, but it also takes a lot of fucking courage to act that way, to put your own fucking yeah. anger aside and move on for the betterment of not just your people, but all people. I think that's a really good lesson to learn. And I would love to hear Mandela talk about what's happening today, right? Where we're in this like entirely intersectional plus vindictive culture in America. It is absolutely insane. The idea that we think this is going anywhere positive is complete nonsense, right? Anybody on any side of this issue that thinks that we're making progress right now is completely retarded. You know what I mean? There's no way. All we're doing is digging a bigger ditch for ourselves, and everybody's digging. Like it's not one group or another digging. We're all digging at the same time, and it's just getting yeah. The hole's getting deeper and deeper. We're never going to be able to get out.
But I think that's what was interesting about this Twitter exchange I had with this dude, where if you're asking for leadership skills like Martin Luther King, right? Mm-hmm. I'm assuming. And again, I'm not black. I know a lot of people think that, and I have certain features that are. Yeah, you can guess what they are. I don't need to get into that backstory. But when he was going through what he was going through at the time, he had to have looked around at the shit show that was America and was like, "All right, well, fuck. I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna try to fix something and try to do it, and then get millions of people to follow your lead and your voice without." Mode of social media or
honestly, part of me even is just like, yo, cult leaders, right? Like, hey, what? Like, if I could, like, what's going? How? What? Like, right? Like, because clearly, because to me, like, those situations were just like, how? Yo, you all thought that the comment was you're gonna hitch a ride on the comment, huh? How'd you convince people of that?
Yeah, or the sex cults, right? Like Nexium, or like whatever Armie Hammer's going through right now. Like he's been cutting people and getting them to bleed and like carving initials into them. I want to know what that initial convo was in the bedroom where it was like, okay, cool. So here's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna eat your pussy for a little bit, and then I'm gonna take out my pocket knife or my Bowie knife and then carve my initials into you, drink your blood, and then obviously I'm gonna strangle bait after that. Like, how do you have that initial convo?
I mean, just put it in your fucking Tinder profile. They know up front. You know what I mean?
But he didn't have one. He was
well,
married.
I mean, look, it's Armie Hammer. Look
I'll
at
tell you
him.
This. I'll tell you this. I'll tell you this. Yeah, well, I'll tell you this. I knew a guy who would carry a rope around at all times, and he used to be a Boy Scout, like tie knots all the time. Like, it was very clear he was into rope stuff. It was never a question because he's literally sitting there just like doing knots. And I guess it's one of those things where it's like you put that billboard out and if no one cares, then they're not into it. They won't engage with you. But the ones that do already have crossed this hurdle to be like, you're already even talking to me, even though I'm a guy sitting here in the bar doing knots. Clearly something's right. Clearly you're also into this. We can make some
assumptions
already.
So it's a filter
already.
Of sorts. Armie Hammer's sitting there carving. Del Toro.
Yeah. It's a filter.
Benicio del Toro should be wearing a shirt that says "I eat ass," right? Because that's all he does is eat ass, apparently. So he should just wear that shirt. I mean, everybody knows it now, but earlier in his career, he should have just worn that shirt. I feel like.
Yeah, Rimmers for Benicio. Yeah. And to your point, Freddie, like, yeah, dude, if I walk into a bar and the guy next to me at the bar is making a midshipman's knot, I'm like, oh, fuck, you're into strangulation. Yeah. All right, cool, man. Enjoy the night, you know, but obviously use a spotter. Be safe. Like, we know what can happen.
So, but
you know, back to what we were talking about, like, you know, who would I talk to and shit? Only one of the people that I would talk to is dead, by the way. Most of them are alive right now.
Oh, okay.
Like OJ.
Who would you talk to that's dead? Oh. Yeah, there's way too many that are just like, yo, what's going on? Like, I want to know the whole story. Like, there's too many people where that's. I don't want advice from you.
I want OJ for, like, just about 6 hours. I want some sodium pentothal and some LSD and be like, just dose him up and be like, come on. What the fuck, bro?
What really happened? Yeah, drop his story.
Just tell me, was it your kid? Was he involved? Or what the fuck happened exactly? I just want to know. I would never repeat it to anybody. I just want to know.
Yeah, Freddie, we had a guy on our show. Dr. Cyril Wecht was his name. It was one of the best shows we've ever had. Go back and listen to it. But he did the autopsies for like over 20,000 dead people and all these celebrities and JFK and everything else. And I asked him about OJ when he was on the show, and he said, because I was like, OJ obviously did it, right? And he goes, sort of. He goes, his kid was there. It was him and his son who did that.
Weird.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, shit. Jeez. But if we got to sit down with OJ and said, look, he's got to be in his 70s at this point. Let's record this interview. Just tell me how you did it, who was there, all this shit. I won't drop it until after
time
you
capsule.
Die.
Time yes. capsule it, yep.
Yeah. If you had a time capsule, how much fucked up shit would be in there?
Oh my God. It'd be just stupid shit. Cause everything that you are into in your life, you just become stupid shit. I was into Pogs, dude. Like if I thought Pogs was going to be the thing.
Wait, Pogs, you mean like fat ass white girls? Or you're talking about like the little.
Yeah. Oh, listen, when I was in grade school.
I'm talking about fat ass white girls. Yeah. I got my interest peaked. I was like, oh shit. Freddie watched the same porn.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of porn, I read this the other day. I was like, this is genius. Do you want to know how you can expand your porn library instantaneously? Which is, they're like, think of whatever your search term you got.
Speaking my language.
That you use. Get it into Google Translate. Translate that into like Spanish. Into now search porn using the translated version of what you said. You've now unlocked an entire library that you've never seen before. In a different language of that whatever category you're into, like get on like some Russian site, get on some Korean site, just pop it in there. Now an entire new world is open.
That's
to
a
you.
Really
you're
good
welcome,
idea.
Everybody.
So one of our other sponsors, one of my sponsors on American Party Podcast is Babbel. That's BABBEL.com. You can use the promo code.
Yeah.
You can use the promo code American for an extra 3 months free on that bitch. Get on there and learn the language of whatever fetish you have. That way you're porn search is going to be way more efficient. Look, we don't have time. I don't have time.
No.
I got to get in and out there. I'm pounding off 5 times a day, right? You got to automate some of that. It's got to be efficient. Learn the language is all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I like that, Freddie.
The name of the game, scalability. Yeah.
Scalability. I'm looking for scalability in my fucking porn watch time.
Every time you're on, Freddie, I learn something new that benefits my life in a way that I never thought possible.
Hey, happy birthday. That's my birthday gift for you. Whatever you're into, man, Google, just translate it.
Well,
I mean, appreciate
that's
it.
That's a pretty good present. I mean, look, it's the gift that keeps on giving. You know what I mean? That's
yeah,
really thoughtful. Exactly. Like, he could have bought you some stupid fucking watch from your childhood because you're
no,
too...
No, 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 no.
But fuck that. Like, I'll give you a piece
give
of information.
Give a man a fish, right?
Yeah.
But teach a man how to use the internet to find more pornography that they're into, and you
right.
keep that dick sore for the rest of their life.
Because that's been a big problem. People have not been able to find enough porn. Actually, that's not a problem. There's so much
no,
porn.
No, it
yeah,
is. It
yeah.
is. There's Pornhub
so,
took
so
away...
Insane.
Pornhub took away 40% of their library, Freddie. Going
yeah
but they had there's still 3 million videos on there. I'm pretty sure you can find something to pound off to you.
Here's my question because this is going to happen, I think, maybe in our lifetimes, but it's absolutely going to happen. The production of porn doesn't make sense to me. There's a certain point where certainly machine learning and digital, like, right, like it's right stuff, CG rendered stuff is getting to the point where we can't tell, right? Deepfake technology is getting to the point where technology doesn't just stagnate. It gets better at it until we can't tell, right? And then if there's one thing you should never bet on, it's computers getting worse at something. No. Right. Computers will get good at stuff. So this is the direction that's going. The porn production, pain in the ass. It's literally and figuratively there's the legality standpoint. There's the need to constantly generate new stuff. This is something that digital machine learning, AI generated stuff could conceivably do. What is the crazy future we're in where it's just like, all right, what are you into? All right, we're gonna do a taste. Answer some questions here on this website. Check out your profile, your perversion profile, and then a bank of supercomputers is just gonna generate it for you, man. AI feet pics. Like how many feet do you want? As much as you want forever.
I've got this idea, and I think honestly, I think somebody could become a billionaire. I'm too lazy to do any of this shit, so I don't really give a fuck. And money, what am I going to do with more money? Spend it on drugs? Come on,
what are you doing with money? Yeah,
like I have to keep my income at I have to put a ceiling on it because if I get too much money, I'm going to die from an overdose. And it's called self care, assholes.
Self preservation.
Exactly. Yeah, I know my limitations. So here's my fucking thought. With deepfake technology is what it is, and psychographic and demographic information being is what it is, I feel like you should be able to take a photograph of a person that you want to have sex with, right, and upload it onto Pornhub or something like that, and then put in their general care, like their fucking body style, their race, and all this stuff, and Pornhub should be able to find, and to do this all automated, right? Should be able to find a woman whose body looks basically like what you're looking for and then deep fake the face onto it. And now you've got custom porn with somebody that you know in your life. Like if your wife's got a hot sister, for example, and you want to fucking fantasize about banging her, I can literally turn that into porn right now. Do you know how much money that technology would be worth? That's an incredible fucking piece of technology. And right now, it's possible to do that.
All the pieces are there. I mean, even if you weren't even generating it, image-based search engine, here's the thing that looks the most like the thing that you're giving me on the search engine. You know why that hasn't happened?
It's because people are afraid of perversion.
Like all the technology stuff is there. It just takes one sick pervert to really put themselves out there to take all the brunt of the assault from all of society, on the face being like this is terrible, but then on the side being exactly what we wanted forever.
Can we stop hiding? The state in the country that has the most watch of gay pornography is fucking Utah, where they're Mormon, right? Where they don't, they're porn or gay is not allowed. Neither one of those things are allowed, right? They spent $23 million trying to defeat Prop 8 back in the day. Can we just be honest about who we are, for Christ's sake, man? I mean, Jesus Christ, can you imagine going to the doctor? If you go to the doctor and you lie about your condition, you're going to die. That's how that works. Like if you got cancer,
you'll be dead.
Yeah, if you go to the doctor and you see like a lump on your chest, he's like, "Hey, you doing all right?" And you'd like pull a coat over the lump on your chest and say it's not there. You're gonna die from cancer, right? So why can't we just be honest about who we are? There's nothing shameful about sex. I mean, there's some shameful stuff you can do, but that's fun too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like Freddie Wong.
Hey, don't knock until you try.
Exactly, Freddie Wong. Put your foot up on the table onto the Zoom, so that way it's out into the world. Okay. There we go.
Listen, I usually charge for this on my OnlyFans.
There it is.
Look at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Asian foot fetish.
AI foot pics was my idea lately, which was like, listen, the rest of the face stuff, like hard, difficult, sure. But you know what we could probably solve with machine learning? Feet. It's not that difficult. And then the problem is I'm like, the adversarial network needs to understand what is a hot foot, like what makes a foot attractive.
So hot or not for feet, is that what you're talking about? What's the
hot or not for feet? And that's going to train our AI to be able to generate the most perfect bespoke AI feet pics for anybody. And then just for the rest of your life, a subscription service, subscription model, we get continuing source of revenue from it. And it's just, you get signed up for perfect feet,
right? Perfectfeet.com,
trained off of the full internet of perverts.
Think about the downstream effects of that. So now people are going to be feeling shamed about their feet, and they're going to be getting foot surgery to have perfect feet now. or whatever, they're going to be bleaching the bottom of their feet the same way that Ross bleaches his butthole now. So we were thinking about, so Ross has this, you've seen
they're
those.
Gonna, they're going to sell so many sheet cakes just for them to step into.
Oh my God.
You know, like.
Man, I got to be honest. I'm not a kink shamer, but I will admit that some of these things are pretty odd. Like the cake, the stepping on balloons to pop them. And it's fine that you like that shit, but please try to help me understand what the fuck is happening.
Killing mice with feet and shit like that. Like those are
Wait,
ones.
Whoa, killing mice with feet is a thing. That's that's a serial killer.
Yeah.
That's a
with a barefoot, Freddie. You know what I'm talking about with a barefoot.
I do. Yeah, there's been some. Yeah.
But hey, look. Here's what you know. And Greg LaMontagne actually in the YouTube chat makes a good point right here. So, if this happens, if this piece of technology comes out and this website comes out and becomes popularized, all the Asian kids are going to be getting into podiatry now, right? They're going to be foot plastic surgeon specialists. That's how you
I
do
just
it.
Here's my question. Here's my question on that. When you're a doctor, right, at some point you declare, like, hey, here's what I'm going to focus on. As a, this is a question I've always had. As a dude, how do you just say with a straight face, gynecology? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do.
Yeah. I've thought about this, right? Because I had a friend from college who ended up becoming a gynecologist, right? And we were like, hey, dream job. And he goes, no, dude, everybody who comes in here has the worst pussies of all time. And he goes, when I have like a beautiful pussy walk into the door, he goes, man, I could probably say twice a year tops where I'm like, holy shit, that's a beautiful pussy. He goes, it is not the job I thought it was going to be, but I'm rich. So he goes, there could be worse things.
Yeah. I mean, he should do an anonymous podcast and just describe the fucking horrible scenes that he's.
Oh, I asked him. I asked him. And he went everything from like, yeast infections to things getting stuck in there that they didn't know were inside there. Like a used condom was in this girl's pussy for like 2 weeks. She didn't know. Like there's a bunch of shit like that.
That's why I don't use condoms.
Yeah. It's not
about the sensation, or it's not like I'm anti-condom. I just feel like it's too dangerous.
It's like when you're hiking or camping, right? Pack in what you pack. Mm-hmm. Pack out what you pack
exactly.
in, so to speak.
Yeah, you got to fucking, if you pack it, you got to carry it, exactly. So if
leave
you,
no trace,
I feel
as they
like
say.
You can't
leave
die
no
from
trace.
AIDS anymore unless you can't die from AIDS anymore unless you're poor. None of the other STDs are going to kill you either, so it's not a matter of life or death anymore, but you can get an infection from a condom stuck up inside your clown hole that's been there for too long, and then you will die from that. I feel like it's safer for me to just to be plowing chicks raw. Can we get a doctor on the show to talk about this? I don't know.
But if we do get a doctor, yeah, make sure they're Asian or Indian, obviously. Like, I'm not going to trust a white. My buddy was white, by the way. That's why he was only doing gynecology, probably. That motherfucker wasn't working on Tiger Woods' leg. But somebody in the chat also said, well, what about Dr. Andrews, the white guy? He only does, like, rotator cuff and Tommy John surgeries.
Yeah, that's it.
White. Like, yeah. So, yeah.
He's
that's
in
a
Houston,
white man's
right?
problem. Yeah, that's a white man's, like, pitcher problem. So it's like, that's a white man working on another white man for shit. But, like, you're not working on one of the world's most elite athletes of all time in Tiger Woods as a white man. I'm sorry. You're not going to do that. Like,
no, and it's kind of racist to say, what about that one white doctor that does that one thing? That's like saying you got a black friend. I don't appreciate that. Whoever
Me
said
neither.
That in the chat, you're racist.
Yeah. Yeah. Look inward.
Yeah.
Okay.
Piece of shit.
Look inward. Freddie, what are you working on these days, man? I feel like you're always doing like dope ass shit.
Oh, what are we working on? There's a couple of things. You know, so this Dungeons and Dragons podcast, I'm like a professional Dungeons and Dragons player called Dungeons and Daddies, which continues
to people are
crank
asking
along.
About that.
That's like a so that's a big one. We keep playing Dungeons and Dragons. The story keeps going. We keep improvising around it. That one's a lot of fun. I'm working on. I'm helping. This is a little bit actually interestingly apropos of some of the previous stuff we're talking about. I'm working on helping my dad out with a memoir of his,
oh, wow.
which is coming out in April. So the reason I'm here is because he was in Communist China during the Cultural Revolution and was like, hey, this is going nowhere. Everybody, you know, it was a total shit show, and he was like, we need to get out. So the way he got out was by swimming the channel between mainland China and Hong Kong, because Hong Kong at the time, right, was a British territory, was this bastion of so he wrote for like the longest time. We've been telling him, like, hey, you gotta write this down, because you know, like it's a sort of forgotten sort of little tidbit of history was these so-called freedom swimmers who swam that channel to get out of
that
China.
That is fucking crazy.
To get to Hong Kong. So he finished the book. And by the way, this is one of those things where I was like, it really made me like re-examine everything I thought I knew about the entertainment industry, because it was like a year and a half ago. He was like, all right, I'll write it down. I was like, all right, okay, so you're a publisher, all this stuff. And then like he was just like, yeah, I finished it. And then we found the publisher like almost right away. And I was like, okay, turns out the only thing holding you back from doing anything is just getting out and just trying it and doing it. Like that was kind of the lesson that I learned from that. So that's coming out in end of April. It's called Swimming to Freedom, which is pretty exciting just because it's kind of like my family story a little bit. And that's like kind of like the two main things on my plate.
Who wrote it, Freddie? Did you have
my
help?
My dad wrote it.
Okay.
No, he wrote it himself 100%. And you know, again, I helped out in terms of like, you know, some, you know, helping him with, you know, some of the English phrases and stuff like that. But, you know, he wrote it down in English. And yeah. And so it is our family story. It's like he went there, and after he got there, you know, he became an electronic salesman for a little bit, immigrated to this country as a political refugee, and then brought the rest of the family over eventually. But it's a crazy story. And he gets into all the stuff like training to like do that swim, like, and it's not an easy swim. People died, and you know, friends of his, like, you know, are lost in the water there.
How is this not, I mean, obviously this has got to be optioned into a movie at some point where you're gonna play your dad, right?
I mean, I think honestly, that's a little bit of the sort of the thing is also he's been thinking about it, like, because
you have to, that's a crazy story. You have to make
it's
that
a crazy
into a movie.
Story. It's also even structured. By the way, just like movie nerd, like director dude coming in perspective, I'm like, it's even a lot of times, like when you take real stories, a lot of times it doesn't quite match, you know, like a
right.
story structure. You kind of have to switch it. It's already kind of structured like really well because he tried twice and failed. It was only the third right. time that he actually was able to get across. Like, it's
oh,
like,
shit.
I think it is. It is. It's a crazy
story.
So,
what do you think the chances are you're going to be able to get Matt Damon to play your dad in this movie?
You know, I think Matt Damon's top of the list. Leonardo, honestly, is the one we're holding out for.
It's Ken Jeong, dude. He's the one that's taking all the Asian roles these days. It's going to be Ken Jeong. He's doing the Mask Singer and all that bullshit. So it's probably KJ. Probably KJ right now.
What about Tony Jaa? He could just do a bunch of Muay Thai in between the swims. That's what I want to see.
I just watched the Monster Hunter movie. I gotta be honest. Yeah. It was fun. It was fun.
They're fun movies. It's like the Fast and Furious movies. Like, I'm not trying to go see an Oscar winner here. I just want to be entertained for 90 minutes, okay?
Hey, he's a charismatic guy. Tony Jaa's
he is
a charismatic guy.
Yeah.
Hey, Freddie, I got a serious question for you, and I'm in all sincerity. How do you fail twice at swimming the channel and then live?
So the first time they got up to the edge of the water, and they were picked up by a communist patrol, like, because the Chinese government knew this was happening. It was kind of an interesting situation where they knew it was happening. You got to also understand China's a huge country. So when you think, oh, the communist, you know, Cultural Revolution, it wasn't like everybody, you know, like bowing down to Mao everywhere, right? The further away you got from the cities, it got a little looser. You know, it was a little bit like, you know, it wasn't like, you know, totalitarian control all the way across. You got to understand that things have these, you know, sort of shapes to it. So they knew that people were going to swimming to Hong Kong. They got caught at the edge of the water by a patrol trying to catch, you know, essentially young people doing it. And it was funny because my dad was saying, like, even at the time, he gets into this. At the time, if you went to a municipal swimming pool, every single person doing laps who was like at the age of 20 there, everybody was training in secret. And like the Chinese government kind of looked the other way, and they didn't understand why at the time. But in the years since, he sort of like was thinking about, it's like, you know what it was? It's because all these people were sending money back to their family back in China. So, okay, we're losing some people, but we're getting an economic benefit from it. So it was one of those situations where it was like, you can't do this. If you keep doing this, we're going to throw you in jail. And so the first time he got caught, he got thrown into a detention facility for a while. Second time they made it all the way across, there was a Chinese junk disguised as a fishing boat that was actually Chinese government in those waters, picked them up and was like, you're coming back. So that one was the worst because they literally were at the shore and they got picked up. They made it across. The third time it was more of a complicated, like they chartered a boat. There was a whole thing. They met out in international water. So it wasn't a swim for the third time, but the third time was also a much more serious one because it was like, it was much more of a conspiracy to kind of get more people across. So if he was caught on that one, it was like, oh, I wouldn't be here. The Wong family line ends right there if he was caught on that third one. That swim is, so it depends. So again, it gets into it in the book, but like it depends on where you are and where you try to go for it. And there was a number of like routes that like these that these swimmers had like figured out. So there's a pretty short route that you definitely can take. However, that one was the most patrolled one. There was other ones where you could go further and like kind of loop around and kind of get across. There were some like islands that you were aiming at. There was like in particular there was one. I'm a little bit foggy on the exact specifics of it, and he gets into it obviously, but there are some like, you know, sort of islands that were technically kind of in the middle ground territory that you could kind of aim at and then go for. So it's a range depending on which and exactly how you chose to attack it.
I'm gonna ask Hot Bob, find out the length of that swim. I'd just be curious to see how long that is.
Yeah.
It's from where to where? Repeat where it's from where it's from so you can look it up.
So it would be from southern China to Hong Kong. And it depends on what sort of, again, where you would go off from. So, like, you know, there's, you know, because there's different parts of the shore that you can kind of, like, you know, make a run at it. And depending on where you go, I can pull it. You know, he actually drew a map.
What's the channel?
So let me pull up that map.
What's the channel?
The channel is...
Freddie Wong on YouTube?
No.
Mirs Bay. Mirs, M-I-R-S Bay. Is kind of like about there, and then you would kind of go from some of the residential, like, again, now they're residential districts, but then so that is a so it looks like the range is like a 5 mile swim in some cases.
Good God.
In some cases a little longer, in some cases a little shorter, depending on, and again, I mean, it depends on where you decide to go for it.
Yeah, if you stay in that middle channel, or I mean, certainly they're not swimming out to the south side into the South China Sea, right? And that would be wild.
Exactly.
So they're going straight across.
And it's all visual stuff, and you're doing it at night too, because you can't be spotted, right? So you're making that move at night to try and aim at, and he talks about like how you knew where Hong Kong was, because again, this was that stark divide between those two countries. Hong Kong was lit. You could see the glow of like Hong Kong. And China, on the other hand, especially during this time, it's like, it's dark, right? It's like the infrastructure, all that stuff is just not there compared to, you know, this British colony that's like just across the water.
Man, that
Anyways,
is a
crazy story.
This is,
it's
this
one
is
that he was told.
Fucking incredible story.
Yeah, yeah. What's the name of that book? Tell everybody again.
It's a crazy story. The book is called Swimming to Freedom. It's going to be coming out April 27th, I think. April 27th, I believe. I think Amazon has some pre-order stuff now, but
yeah,
I'm going to be talking about it as time goes on. But yeah, it's a crazy story. It's one that he's always told, and it's one that, like, you know, late at night, after dinner, you can get him to tell stuff from it. And I'm really happy that finally he's managed to get it all out and like kind of put it somewhere that we can kind of look at. And
yeah,
you
know, this is awesome.
It's been a process for him. Yeah, it's pretty rad.
There's a couple of Swimming to Freedoms with subtitles. This one is Swimming to Freedom, My Escape from China and the Cultural Revolution by Kent Wong.
Yes.
That's the one. And it,
Kent
again,
Wong, that's right.
Debuts on April 27th, 2021. This is going to be fucking dope, man. I can't
believe
this.
Hey, was Kent picked by him, or was that his real Chinese name?
So it was picked by him, and this is also something that was hilarious. So when he came to this country, he wanted to go to college. And he was like, I'm too old, though. He was like, you know, sort of in his 20s. And he's like, I need to lie about my age, because he didn't know that you can just go to college in America. He had this idea that you have to be younger to get
That's
into college here.
Funny.
So he lied about his age when he came. He lied and said he was 3 years younger than he was. And then now he was like, that would be totally fine, except I fucking cheated myself out of social security benefits in this country because I'm a lot older than I actually am.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Like, you can't go back and be like, sorry, I lied about that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not going to work. He's like, damn it.
He's going to have to work 3 extra years now for that the social security benefits.
I've got one more question about this whole situation. Now, he swam the Mirs Bay to get away from communism in China. Now, all these people... and your old stomping grounds in the Pacific Northwest. Any chance Antifa's going to swim to China to go back to that bullshit? Or is that...
You know, it's a little bit too far. It's a little bit too far. You know, and it is you know, something that he talks about a lot, and just, you know, and I think that it's something that he talks about a lot in terms of just thinking about, like, he has seen firsthand what fervor looks like in this sort of way. And, you know, it's something that, you know, we talk about, and it's something that he, you know, and again, I think it's always never going to be a perfect one-to-one comparison, but it's one of the things that, you know, for them, they're just like, yeah, you know, it is interesting, because I think he looks at this country as like, it means so much to him, because it represented,
you know, it represented this escape from communism, and it represented all the opportunity, and you know, that he had in his life was as a result of coming over here. But he also, again, to speak to that pragmatism, he also has like no qualms of being like, hey, if we need to move somewhere, if something, you know, if in the 20, you know, whatever, how many years, if stuff gets crazy or wherever it is, your mom and I aren't afraid of like moving either, which is like such an interesting thing, because I feel like so many times you hear this immigrant story of it, like they are absolutely in love and he absolutely loves this country, but he also has in the back of his head, there's that pragmatism that he's sort of taught us, which is like, hey, take care of yourself and your family.
Right.
Like, do what you got to do to survive.
I think that speaks to what America is. America, to me at least, is not a geographical location. It's certainly not an ethnicity. To me, it is the idea that individual liberty, right, supported
mindset,
by the collective will of the people, is the most important idea in human political history. It's the only one that ever put the power back into the hands of the people that document the Constitution, looked at past documents like, you know, the rights of man, the Magna Carta and shit like that. And even the Constitution itself, when it was originally written, only applied to white landowners, right? But now we understand, I think, through all this process, that it's not about the people. It's not about the government, it's not about the geography or any of that stuff. It's about making sure that idea applies to everyone. Because if liberty is not liberty for everyone, then it doesn't really exist, right? It's just another form of oppression and control. And I think that's something that people like your father probably understand more than others. I assume when he looks around this country and sees people pining for things that he literally risked his life 3 times to escape, then he's probably either deeply offended or extremely alarmed or both, right? I mean, how do you tell that story to people that have never actually faced it?
That's what owes to the cyclical nature of human history, right? Is that at the end of the day, as you said, right, there, your lived experience is the most powerful thing that you will go through. And I think that to some extent, you know, I think that the wisdom that he brings to the table is like, to some extent, your generation needs to learn in the same way you raise a kid, right? Like, you can only go so far in terms of teaching. You also have to let people, right? They're going to make their own mistakes, and they're going to have to learn from the lessons in their own lives, and their own unique experience is going to shape them. And to some extent, the same thing's going to happen again to a next generation. And that's been going, right? Like, during all of this, like, I've gotten really into, like, Roman history, and it's really interesting to read into that and be like, yeah, there's just so many of these things just continually. It's the same sort of song and dance, but different generations facing it in their different time periods.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. Somebody in the YouTube chat here said that during the Hong Kong riots, they were actually waving American flags around. I think that's, I mean, that flag has got to mean more than just the 50 states that we have, right, to me.
Yeah.
It's got to be more than even the laws of this country, like football and baseball that started here. It's got to be more than all the things that we think are America. The only thing that really matters about that flag is it is a standard under which everybody that's looking for liberty can stand. It has to be that. Otherwise, this is fucking pointless. Like, let's just be another country, if that's the case, and stop talking about how great it is. Because nobody else in the world, like, you know, if you meet an Italian, right? If an Italian comes here to America, they don't walk around Brooklyn talking about, or an Italian immigrant, rather. They don't walk around Brooklyn talking about, Italian, Italy's the best damn country in the world, man. Hell yeah. They've got like a fucking trucker hat with an Italian flag on it and shit. That is not a thing. So if we're going to talk all this shit,
They got a Ferrari jacket.
Yeah. If we're going to talk all this shit, let's make sure we're earning that.
I've always felt that there needs to be a new patriotism which says, I want to look at every metric, and I want us to be the top of that. I want to be like, hey, education. I want to be the best at that. You know, every single thing that you can look at and be like, what happened to us looking around being like, yo, yeah, Europe can't. It's like, what do you mean? Like, do better than all of them. We should be able to do better than all of them. And I think, you know, anyway. Right.
Imagine an athlete that did that. Imagine an athlete that sucked at everything, right? Or imagine an athlete that's been retired for years, like the ball dad, right?
Oh, yeah. Smush Parker. Like, you know, one of those guys.
Like, talking all that shit, like the Lonzo and LaMelo's dad talking all that shit about how he could beat Michael Jordan and one-on-one and stuff like that, and everybody rolled their eyes and laughed at him. And if you think that the world doesn't roll their eyes and laugh at America when we're 32nd in education globally and we have, like, the 16th highest fucking infant mortality rate amongst developed nations, you don't think they're fucking rolling their eyes when we talk about how we're the best country in the world? You're out of your fucking mind.
Yeah.
Earn it. That's it. Tom Hanks said it at the end of Saving Private Ryan. Earn it. And Matt Damon earned it.
Yeah, he did.
And that's why he's starring in all these Chinese movies.
God damn right he is.
And he earned it. He's paying it off by getting into Chinese cinema blockbusters, stopping monsters from ancient China from taking down the Great Wall.
What if that's what it was? What if these aren't even movies and Matt Damon is seriously saving China? And all these white people are mad at him. And he's like, dude, I'm just trying to save China. Would you fucking stop?
That would be great.
Damn it. Freddie, I got one more question before we get out of here today. I know you're a busy dude, and we appreciate you being here. You and I are homies in real life. And the last time you were on the show, we went out to dinner afterwards. And I was kind of picking your brain about the future of things because you're always on the cutting edge of YouTube or video and everything else. You and I think last year were talking about Bitcoin a lot. Can you?
Yeah.
And now this year it's fucking exploded. Now it's dropping and all this other stuff. Can you wrap your mind around what's going on with Bitcoin today and let everybody know? And do you still have it?
For me, Bitcoin bought both of my computers. I was in at $10 and I sold at various times to buy computers and like computer parts. So everything that I've been using for like my work and stuff is basically free as a result of that. Bitcoin's wild to me because it's increasingly irrational in that I don't understand where the value of it can come from because aside from just being a thing that everyone parks their money in and then X amount of time passes and I get more money out of it. It's like a free slot machine. It's the way people are treating it. It's like it's a free slot machine that I always win at, right? And so it's like, okay, what can we use Bitcoin for, right? Gold, everyone's like, well, yeah, but like gold, it's like, okay, we still use gold and semiconductors. Human beings like baubles and jewelry, so there's something there, so there's like a baseline for it. And Bitcoin's really interesting to me because it's like, okay, for a while, I was like, crime. Crime will always be the baseline of Bitcoin because crime needs to happen. People need to get paid. They need a way to do it anonymously. But then even then, you look at some of the FBI stuff, and like, they did figure out how to like defog some of these big transactions and figure out who took it out. So it's like, okay, so crime, maybe not as much as I thought before. It's starting to look more and more just like a thing where, the money comes from somewhere. It comes from people in the future who are buying into it. If I'm buying it right now at 50 grand a coin, I'm expecting that I will be able to get it back for either, exactly 50 grand or that my money will stay there or whatever. But like, to me, it just feels like everyone's at a party. And the way you get into the party is you got to put $10 into the empty swimming pool. And everyone's standing around right now being like, yo, look at all this money in the swimming pool. And at some point, someone's gonna be like, I'm going to just grab a handful and fucking ditch. And the moment that happens, everyone's gonna be like, now it's my turn to grab my handful and ditch. And there's going to be people who get their handfuls and get out of there. And there's going to be a lot of people being like, ah, shit, I showed up late to this party and all my money I threw into the pool disappeared.
Yeah, it's weird because, Dan and I have done a stonks episode about all of our stonks we have. Yeah. Diamond hands, laser eyes, dude, is what we have, obviously, Freddie.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course.
But you look at today, man, AMC is what we went all in on, right? We got in at 5 and then it ended up going to 20 and then it fell back down. Robinhood fucked everybody and wouldn't let people trade it or buy it. And so did a lot of people. It wasn't just Robinhood. It was, TD Ameritrade, a bunch of these firms. And then they just turned off the market like 8 times in 2 days. And they were like, well, no, we're going to stop this for a little bit and let everybody get out. And, because a bunch of hedge firms were going to get fucked. But then today, Bitcoin dropped, I heard, $10,000. But AMC is through the roof right now. And somebody in the chat said GameStop. I'll have to double check it, but what's happening with it and why is there such wild drastic dips in like Bitcoin?
Here's the thing that worries me. The thing that worries me is there's so many things just in the last like few months. There's so many things that people are pointing at and being like, this is the way to get rich quick. Everything is turning into get rich quick schemes, whether we're talking about fucking selling graphics cards and PS5s to Bitcoin or Ethereum and NFTs to the stock market at all-time highs. But the way everyone's thinking about it is they're thinking about it as, if I put my money in this, I wait a little bit and I'll get more out. Like,
I just don't think, like, I literally have, like, the last few days, I'm like, I feel like my understanding of reality has become untethered. Like, I don't get it. It really is kind of, like, flummoxing me. And, like, you know, to some extent, you know, you look at, like, Logan Paul minting a bunch of NFT and making $3.5 million in a day. On one hand, you can be like, is that a celebrity basically minting money for himself? On the other hand, you're like, well, it's kind of a contest around Pokemon cards, so it's, like, kind of a contest thing, so it's not quite exactly that. But it just feels like that's accelerating to me. It's just like we're all sitting around cooped up. Everyone's getting a sense of like, hey, there's some people with stupid money. I want stupid money. How can I get stupid money quick? There's, oh, maybe it's this. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's this. Maybe I got to hoard graphics cards. Maybe I got to start mining. Maybe I got to start looking at Dogecoin. It just seems like this crazy frenzy. And I said this on my Twitter where I'm like, this feels like the moment that we all look back at later and we say, wow, whoa. What were we thinking? All the signs were there. Anywhere you looked, stuff was going crazy. Nothing made sense, but it was fine because nothing made sense. And so it didn't stick out. Nothing stuck out because everything didn't make sense. Anyway, that's how I feel. I've always felt broadly that just very quickly, there's always two groups of people, right? It's either you heard about it and you're getting in on it, or you saw it going up and then you got into it early. And the people in the first category, which for a lot of people was like, you know, the GameStop folks and all that, it's like, you can get out of it, right? You can grab the money that's sitting in the pool and run out of it in time, but you're the cannon fodder, right? Like, don't forget, you're the cannon fodder. You're just as likely that you're going to sit there with a drink in your hand being like, ah, shit, I missed my chance. So it's some high stakes. It's basically some high stakes roulette and craps going on just across so many different things right now.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the numbers. So GameStop right now, as of today, just today's market, is up, including the after hours, 130%.
What?
Today. And then AMC, again, Diamond Hands, Laser Eyes, Freddy, is up 20% today. So are we headed to another run like this? And do you follow it on Reddit? Because, again, you're a guy to me that is always ahead of these trends, and you know where to find them.
If you're to me, the thing is you have to look where everyone else isn't. You have to get a sense of where everyone is, but you also need to find the places where the sparks come up, right? Like, so I remember Bitcoin, like, it was on weirder forums for a long time back in the, you know, dollar, sub-dollar range. It, like, they didn't even have a subreddit. Reddit might as well be Google at this point. It is a pretty popular website that tons of people, right? Like, Wall Street Bets has, what, 6 million people? How many millions of people are on Wall Street Bets? That's the signals that get filtered down to those places are going to be, you know, could be correct, but they're going to be late. Like, you need to dig and be like, okay, what are the weird Discord servers where people are talking about this? You need to try and find the root of some of this stuff if you want to get a little bit away from being right under the gun, being cannon fodder, I think. So I would say, you know, so Discord servers, anyway, you know, and a lot of that stuff is private. You know, it's you have to kind of poke around. You have to kind of dig. You have to be a computer nerd. You gotta be a big old computer nerd and be willing to be like sign up for some weird shit just to see what's going on. I think that's your best chance of getting a sense of it.
Do you have any tips for the audience? This is where I was going with this.
If you show up in a place and you feel out of place and you feel like they're using language you don't understand and there's effort to try and understand what the hell that language is, I found that that's generally a good sign. Anytime that you have to be like, I don't feel like I belong here and I have to kind of look up. If you find yourself in one of those situations, don't just run away from it. Hang on a little bit and like kind of poke around and try and understand it. Take that effort to kind of like decipher what's in front of you. And I think it's really important. The thing that I always saw also, it's like, don't get caught up in anything you read online. You have to like have a real life sounding board or something, because there's so many things where you have to surround yourself with more than just what you see online, because everybody online, you don't know what their motives are. You don't know who they are. You don't know what is right. You don't know if this post is part of some pump and dump scheme or whatever, but it can look and smell like a real thing. Your sniff detector in terms of what is bullshit and what's not is going to be really hard to decipher from that frenzy. So you got to get out of the frenzy as much as you can. Stick to what you think are sound principles. I remember the night after Elon tweeted, I think I said something on my Twitter being like, this feels like Elon. It's like this. It's a short from here, right? Like, who else other than Elon tweeting about it? I know my dad's not going to dump into GameStop. He doesn't care. So there's no new money coming into this. So, like, okay, where's it going to go from here? It feels like it doesn't have anywhere, right? Like, it's just like a viral anything. like it needs fuel for the fire to keep going. And you're really more thinking about people. Again, by the way, not investment advice. I don't know what the hell I'm doing with any of this stuff. I just try to be like, does this make sense? And I will say, to me, a lot of this stuff doesn't make sense right now.
No, it's qui bono, right? Always ask yourself qui bono, who benefits? And
yes,
I mean, we know from politics, nothing is more important than name recognition. You know what I mean? Otherwise, Donald Trump never would have been president in this country. I don't care what he would have said. If he had been a relatively unknown person and came out not saying the things he said, but acting and behaving the way he did, 0% chance he would ever been elected. I mean, how often does the best candidate even get into the race, much less win the goddamn thing, right? So it's very interesting.
By the way, you know that's true. By the way, not even at the highest levels of government, even in like your homeowners association, even in your condo like group, like that doesn't even happen. So like, what do you expect? Come on.
No, I've got a quote about that. It's the people who have power rarely deserve it, and the people who deserve it rarely want it. Or I'm sorry, the people who want power rarely deserve it, and the people who deserve power rarely want it. It's just that is the way it is. People that are good people are typically just taking care of themselves and not getting involved in other people's business. They certainly don't have egos such that they think they're going to be able to tell people better to do than what they are doing already. I mean, how presumptuous and egotistical is it to be like, hey, I see you're trying to struggle your way through life, but I probably have a better idea. Like there are some useful insights there, but judgment towards people who are doing certain things, like Gary Vee saying, telling 19-year-olds to quit college and go start a business. Like, I mean, cool, man. That was easy for you to do when you were 19 and your parents gifted you a $2 million fucking winery. All right. But not everybody has that luxury, bro. So let's maybe, you know, just be a little bit more reasonable. And you're right about that. Apply the Socratic method to everything.
Apply
some level of academic rigor. Yeah, exactly.
And I found what's helpful is like start with a thesis. Be like, I think this is the case. And then find as many ways as you can to prove yourself wrong.
Exactly.
And if you can survive that, then it's like, okay, maybe there's something there. But even if you feel like it's solid, always have it in the back of your head. Be like, might not be solid. I might be wrong. I might be missing something. Because odds are you probably are missing something.
Yeah, and to update this real quick here, because, you know, on the East Coast, we're at the close of the bell. AMC and GME are both up, and Reddit is down right now. They froze GME. Brent Smith is saying right before the close, and now it's lifting off. So they clearly stopped it again. And then he's also saying that WSB, which is Wall Street Bettors, iPhone app is updating the GME thread, but not the browser, though, if you guys are into that. Our Stonks episodes do really, really well. Again, diamond hands, laser eyes, Freddie. That's all I fucking do with AMC. And I'm riding it to the moon, Freddie. It's going to pay for, you know, my downstairs that got ruined in the accident. Now's the point in the show we get to the Drinker Bro of the Week. If you don't mind, I'm actually going to give this to my grandmother who passed away today. She was rad, man. She like not only bought me beer in high school, but actually let me throw keg parties and then would help clean up like outside with my friends and shit the next day. RIP to Grandma Osif. I love you. But she lived a great long life. She was 88 years old. So.
Yeah, grandmas are where it's at. It's almost like a trope in American culture that grandmas, there are all these memes about grandmas, like they're super protective, but also they feed you. Like you can't go into your grandma's house without getting fed, right? But I wonder, because my grandma was the same way. And as a matter of fact, when I was growing up, she was the only adult that ever kind of had my back at any point. So I wonder what this next generation, these 40 and 50 year old women right now that are super Karens, what kind of grandmas are they going to be? You know what I mean? Like, are we losing that grandma that's a tough old lady but still is very empathetic and takes care of her fucking family? Is she going to be just like criticizing her grandchildren instead of feeding them moving forward? Or how's that going to, I'm really afraid for the American grandma right now.
Yeah. And then you can look back at your grandma.
Short American grandmas. I'm going to do short American grandmas real quick. Just call my broker.
Because today's generation will be able to look back through Instagram at their grandma and be like, why were you traveling so much around the world with older men at such a young age? You know?
Damn, and clearly they were work.
Yeah, they were chugging dick for you know, just a trip like a Mediterranean cruise. Chugging some cock.
Hey, look, that's a fair trade for me.
It's a fair trade for everyone. Freddie, thanks for being with us. Tell everybody where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at F Wong You can find my podcast that I'm doing now. It's called Story Break, and also another podcast called Dungeons and Daddies. That's a D&D podcast. And my dad's book comes out April 27th. It's called Swimming to Freedom.
Sweet.
Kent Wong, check that out immediately. Freddie, we love you, buddy. You're one of our faves. Thanks for stopping by. You always bring the thunder every time you're
thanks
here.
For having me on.
And it's, dude, it's always our pleasure, man. For D'Anthony Holloway, Freddie Wong, I am Ross Patterson. We are the Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone. Thanks again to Omaha Steaks for being the title sponsor of the Tetherball Academy Media Network, including our Drinking Bros family out there. Get yourself some amazing steaks using the link in the show notes. Supporting our partners like Omaha Steaks is one of the best ways you can support our shows so we can keep bringing you the podcast you know and love on a day-in, day-out basis. Thank you to OmahaSteaks.com.